must I know these things? And what may I choose not to know? Appion, the scholar, who drew crowds to his lectures all over Greece in the days of Gaius Caesar, and was acclaimed a Homerid by every state, used to maintain that Homer, when he had finished his two poems, the Iliad and the Odyssey, added a preliminary poem to his work, wherein he embraced the whole Trojan War. The argument which Appion adduced to prove this statement was that Homer had purposely inserted in the opening line two letters, which contained a key to the number of his books. A man who wishes to know many things must know such things as these, and must take no thought of all the time which one loses by ill health, public duties, private duties, daily duties, and sleep. Apply the measure to the years of your life. They have no room for all these things. I have been speaking so far of liberal studies, but think how much superfluous and unpractical matter the philosophers contain. Of their own accord, they also have descended to establishing nice divisions of syllables to determining the true meaning of conjunctions and prepositions. They have been envious of the scholars, envious of the mathematicians. They have taken over into their own art all the superfluidities of these other arts. The result is that they know more about careful speaking than about careful living. Let me tell you what evils are due to over-nice exactness, and what an enemy it is of truth. Protagoras declares that one can take either side and debate it with equal success. Even on this very question, whether every subject can be debated from either point of view. Nausiphanes holds that in things which seem to exist, there is no difference between existence and non-existence. Parmenides maintains that nothing exists of all this which seems to exist, except the universe alone. Zeno of Elea removed all the difficulties by removing one, for he declares that nothing exists. The Pyrrhonian, Megarian, Eretrian, and academic schools are all engaged in practically the same task. They have introduced a new knowledge, non-knowledge. You may sweep all these theories in with the superfluous troops of liberal studies. The one class of men give me a knowledge that will be of no use to me. The other class do away with any hope of attaining knowledge. It is better, of course, to know useless things than to know nothing. One set of philosophers offers no light by which I may direct my gaze toward the truth. The other digs out my very eyes and leaves me blind. If I cleave to Protagoras, there is nothing in the scheme of nature that is not doubtful. If I hold with Nausiphanes, I am sure only of this, that everything is unsure. If with Parmenides, there is nothing except the one. If with Zeno, there is not even the one. What are we, then? What becomes of all these things that surround us, support us, sustain us? The whole universe is then a vain or deceptive shadow. I cannot readily say whether I am more vexed at those who would have it that we know nothing, or with those who would not leave us even this privilege. Farewell. Letter 89. On the Parts of Philosophy. It is a useful fact that you wish to know, one which is essential to him who hastens after wisdom, namely, the parts of philosophy and the division of its huge bulk into separate members. For by studying the parts, we can be brought more easily to understand the whole. I only wish that philosophy might come before our eyes in all her unity, just as the whole expanse of the firmament is spread out for us to gaze upon. It would be a sight closely resembling that of the firmament. For then surely philosophy would ravish all mortals with love for her. We should abandon all those things which, in our ignorance of what is great, we believe to be great. Inasmuch, however, as this cannot fall to our lot, we must view philosophy just as men gaze upon the secrets of the firmament. The wise man's mind, to be sure, embraces the whole framework of philosophy, surveying it with no less rapid glance than our mortal eyes survey the heavens. We, however, who must break through the gloom, we whose vision fails even for that which is near at hand, can be shown with greater ease each separate object, even though we cannot yet comprehend the universe. I shall therefore comply with your demand, and shall divide philosophy into parts, but not into scraps. For it is useful that philosophy should be divided, but not chopped into bits. Just as it is hard to take in what is indefinitely large, so it is hard to take in what is indefinitely small. The people are divided into tribes, the army into centuries. Whatever has grown to greater size is more easily identified if it is broken up into parts. But the parts, as I have remarked, must not be countless in number and diminutive in size, for over-analysis is faulty in precisely the same way as no analysis at all. Whatever you cut so fine that it becomes dust is as good as blended into a mass again. In the first place, therefore, if you approve, I shall draw the distinction between wisdom and philosophy. Wisdom is the perfect good of the human mind. Philosophy